From the EAH team, welcome to Everything About Hydrogen. This is the podcast that explores the world of hydrogen and its derivative technologies and interrogates how it is changing the world of energy as we know it. Join hosts Patrick Malloy, Principal of the Breakthrough Technologies Group at RMI, Alicia Eastman, Co-Founder and Board Director of Intercontinental Energy, and Chris Jackson, CEO of Protium, as the team speak to some of the most innovative and exciting players in the industry. If you are a fan of the show, we would absolutely love if you would leave us a five-star review for Everything About Hydrogen, wherever you get your podcast from. It really does help boost us up the charts and help people to find us. And with that, I'll leave it to the team and let's get on with the show.
Okay. Hey, Alicia, how are you? What's going on?
Good. Been very busy, but it's all going well. I am right now in Abu Dhabi, and there is a conference tomorrow that's sponsored by Masdar, and it's alongside IRENA's ministerials. So there are quite a few really interesting people that'll be there tomorrow. And I'm moderating a couple panels of some really interesting people as well. So it's exciting. And then I'm off to Hong Kong so that I can keep my permanent residency there. Everyone is hearing about all of my immigration woes. But they're not really woes. It's just, they keep changing the rules on what you're supposed to do. How about you? How have you been?
I'm good. Spring has sprung in Washington, D.C. So we have the onset of, I think it's the first full summer or whatever our one of our spikes in humidity and heat for their pre-actual summer. But we've also got the spring meetings this week. So all the multilateral folks are all in town and obviously all the stakeholders are around that. So, yeah, fantastic times. And also it's nice to see folks out and about and stuff going on. So good, I think. And it's nice to be finished with winter finally.
Yeah. Winter's hanging on in the UK.
I mean, it always does, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess it's because the grass never dies and all these plants start popping up in early February. You're like, okay, it's spring, but then it's really cold for another 2 or 3 months. I didn't grow up in a sort of mild coastal weather area. When it was winter, it was like winter. 20 feet of snow, get snow that drifts in so you can't open your door. Really crazy snow. Whereas London is just sort of, it's not exactly comfortable, but it's not really cold and it doesn't really snow.
But there is a pleasant advantage to that, which is exactly avoiding the extremes. So as much as we want to complain about weather or talk about weather a little bit, I suppose we don't do that too much. I suppose we should ask, because we had a far more topic relevant conversation with Adamo. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about who Adamo is.
Sure. Well, I mean, honestly, I think most people know Adamo Scaranci. He is Italian but French, from north of France. And he has been in hydrogen for a very long time, over 30 years. He worked at Air Liquide. He is also was the head of hydrogen, or sort of what became Nucera and then got spun off, at ThyssenKrupp. And then he went to Total and he was the head of hydrogen at Total. And now he is at NextChem. So he's basically sort of pushing beyond the renewables, and then with the renewables, making hydrogen, which is a molecule, and then figuring out a better way to transport and store that molecule by turning it into a different molecule. Or most of the rest of us stopped at ammonia, but he's moving into all types of chemicals. So if you can get to methanol, then you can basically get to any kind of olefin. And then if you can get to the olefins, then you can make a lot of things. So he's just taking it to the next step. That's what he likes to say about NextChem.
NextChem to the next step. With that, maybe we should get him on.
Adamo, how are you?
Super good, Alicia. Very happy to talk to you today.
It's really wonderful to have you on the show. I think everybody is going to be really interested in all the stories that you have about how you got here. And before we even ask about NextChem, it would be great to hear just about your whole career trajectory, like how you arrived at your position today and some of the highlights that you'd like to share.
Yeah, you know, it's easy to look back. You know, when I look back, I say I started working in hydrogen was in 1988, was something like more than 35 years ago. But it was just by case. I jumped in the hydrogen story by developing a fuel cell at that time. But what is really driving me, I realized during the last 10 years where I decided to do what I like to do, in fact, is more regarding the fact that I consider that energy is very important for society. So I like to work in a field where there is an impact, and a big impact is related to energy. And the second point is that I like to work with people that are motivated and committed and that are looking at the positive way and in front of us and not back in the past. So these are the two drivers for me that push me to take every time new challenge. I work for big organizations like Air Liquide, like Total, to transform a little bit what they were doing in terms of energy. But I also started some crazy initiative like McPhee Energy from scratch to put IPO and ThyssenKrupp Nucera to be one of the leading company in the electrolysis. So I like everything that is related to energy. I like working with people that are looking in front of us and to have an impact.
So Adamo, I appreciate the personal introduction, but I think I have to ask you a little bit about NextChem and how that came about, where you're focused, and I suppose how you're getting started.
Yes, this is my next challenge, I would say, because I joined NextChem last summer. And NextChem is, a four-year initiative within Maire Tecnimont, a very reputable company doing EPC job, also at large scale. You know, the last project we are working on is roughly 9 billion euros in the Middle East, so it's a huge project. And what we do in NextChem is to develop all the technologies that are related to sustainable technology solutions to the energy transition. So bringing together all the technology. And what is, I would say, very, very interesting for me is to try to accelerate this energy transition and the technology deployment. You need technology from one side, but you need also a company that are able to deliver and to make the plant and to deliver the plant in the right time and in the right cost. And that's why I think here in NextChem we are well organized and we have a well positioned, being able to develop technology. So energy transition for us means hydrogen, carbon capture, carbon circularity, biofuel, e-fuel, methanol, ammonia, of course, and also plastic recycling in that sense. So all that is related to energy transition. And also what is good in our organization is we have the technologies part, the engineering and construction part, which is key. And also the third part is to be able to finance and to invest in project, to secure and to be committed to that project. So the three legs that make the project really happen and go to the final stage.
So maybe the immediate question that I'd kind of ask is, you know, where are you starting? Like how, this is a very broad ranging, broad application kind of space. It has obviously some huge complexity, but maybe where is the easiest place to begin, or maybe not the easiest, but the place you've chosen?
Good question. You know, as you said, you know, it's quite complex. You know, we are living a very, very interesting time, because there are a lot of challenges, and I like very much to face the challenges. This is more exciting me, where we need to learn change. As you said, it's quite complex. When you start doing, let's say, for example, hydrogen, you say, okay, I make hydrogen from renewable, but what is the hydrogen is used for? Is it used for energy? Is it used for industry, for chemical production? So you have a lot of different parameters. And then you say, okay, I need to capture the carbon to reduce the CO2 emission. Then another question, what do you do with this carbon? Are you going to make new molecules? Are you going to store it? So it's quite complex. And when you put together all the pieces of the technology, which is very motivating, very interesting, you need to be very smart in identifying the first priority. And this is not always easy. I won't say what is the easiest place, because I don't like what is easy, I would say, but we need to prioritize. And there is no one solution. You know, there are several options, depending on the country where you are, the policy that are applied in this country, the rules, and also the asset that every country has. You know, some places you have more gas, you can store the CO2. In some other places, you are more renewable. In some other places, you are going to develop maybe nuclear power. So there are a lot of different tools that you need to work with. I used to say we are just at the beginning of the story, and it's a transition. What is important is to consider that it's a transition. We don't need to make a too tough revolution. Otherwise, it can be very difficult for the society, because at the end of the day, we need to solve the trilemma of the energy. We need to bring more energy. We need to give sustainability. And also, we need to think about the planet. And this is a big trilemma, because bringing more energy with sustainability and with affordability and thinking about the planet, this is a trilemma. It's not always easy to find one solution. You need a portfolio of solutions that are different from one place to another. What is now obvious, you know, when I started working on green steel was in 2012. It was 11 years ago, and I said, oh, let's look at green steel, can be an option, etc. Now it's getting there. You know, a lot of green steel plants are getting to the financing stage. Then I said, hydrogen is mainly used to produce methanol and ammonia. This will be one path that is very important to decarbonize, to produce methanol and ammonia using CO2-free hydrogen, I would say, low-carbon hydrogen or renewable hydrogen. And this, we see a lot of projects in that area growing. We see also the potential of ammonia being more than just a chemical for fertilizer. So you need to produce ammonia, for example, that can be used as a fuel in a gas turbine, in coal fire plant to reduce the CO2 emission. So we see in different places of the globe different technologies that are developing. And also what is important is that you need to think about also bringing energy to the population. To do that, you need to go from electron to chemicals. And this is important, where the hydrogen is playing a big role. You transform the electron in hydrogen, and then this hydrogen into other chemicals that can be transported. I always used to say what makes the oil so successful, the big success of oil, is that first, you can drill and it's for free. But beside that is that you can store for a long period of time, and you can transport also easily around the globe. So you can bring energy where you want and when you want. And this is a big value of the energy, to use the energy where and when. And not so much how much does it cost at the beginning, but how much does it cost where and when you want to use it. So this is important, and I think if you think that way, you are going to see easily what are the first priority for each country, for each technology.
Yeah, I mean, I really agree with you that there's sort of a tendency to have a priority list for that's supposed to apply to everywhere, but it's obviously context matters, and what resources or what problems or what assets and resources that we've talked about are available are really going to decide the solution. So I see that you've also focused on the role of circular carbon's role in the energy transition. How does that feed into your strategy around fuels and polymers?
You know, I think, as I said, and as you said, Alicia, we need to use every weapon we have to decarbonize, everyone. There is no one that is better than the other. We need to use everything. And circular is the first priority, you know, to use more and more every carbon atom that we produce, because we need carbon. The organic chemistry means carbon content. And we need carbon to bring energy, to produce energy, and to produce a lot of chemicals we are using every day. So we cannot stop that. So we need to reuse as much as we can. So we need to capture whatever we can. We need to reuse all the product as much as we can to recycle that. So we have different projects ongoing. carbon capture, usage of carbon to produce chemicals like methanol. And this methanol can be used as a fuel for the shipping industry because there are a lot of area where you cannot electrify. You know, electrification is very good, but electrification has some limitation. Of course, we are going to develop more and more electrification application. But you need also to store the energy and to transport the energy in large scale. And so the big ship, the aircraft, they need liquids. They need very dense energy content that is only achieved with liquids, with hydrocarbon. And so we need to reproduce this hydrocarbon. All the plastic, all the waste industry, we need to recycle as much as we can. Of course, today it's cheaper to produce new plastic than to recycle. But we need to put in place the right rule to make it happen as a business case. So we are developing, we have a plant that is recycling 30,000 tons of plastic every year. And this is just the beginning to show that it's possible to do. First, technically, we need to show that technically we can do. And second, we need to show that we can do at a reasonable price that make it competitive. And then after that, we can invest and deploy that in larger scale.
So speaking of the kind of the deployment aspects of this, you know, and particularly thinking about market kind of formations, one thing that we reasonably consistently now see is references to, you know, life cycle certification and how that is essentially crucial for one, differentiating these products, and also two, for giving that kind of certainty of that kind of sustainability kind of target that you've spoken to. As we contemplate some of these marketplaces, what's missing? And, you know, if we were to start today, some of these chemicals, how could we identify a clean chemical given the current landscape?
That's a very, very good question and very complex, you know, because this kind of certificate, we know it's quite complex to have a common rule at the world level, because this is what we need. And it's quite complex. But I would say the first priority in that sense is to work with what I call the early adopters, the pioneers. You know, there are a lot of companies that want to do something, and they want to do it because it has a very good impact in their, visibility and commitment to reduce their emission. Look at some car manufacturers, don't want to name them. They put some target. Food industry, you saw people that are making very high level of clothing, etc., that can afford to show that they are doing something. And this I call him the pioneer, that are able to develop the market and to pull a little bit the market. I will take an example. We are working with a company that is called Heineken, that is making beer. And they said, we want to go to the first thing, to the fertilizer that is used to grow the seeds, etc., to produce the beer at the end, and to make it green or CO2-free from the real beginning. And we are developing a strategy. And we make the calculation, you know, for them to go to green fertilizer, the impact on one bottle of beer, that is €1, is less than 1 cent. And, you know, when you touch that to the customer, I think every one of us is ready to pay 1 cent more the bottle of beer if we inform them properly. And same story with the green steel. We make the same calculation with the green steel for a car. The impact on the car to go for green steel is less than €100 on a full car like the new electrical cars. You know, €100 on a €30,000 car, you can sell it. So we need to find these early adopters. And then, of course, we need to make fair the competition between the different industry and players on the market. Otherwise, nobody is going to jump in the swimming pool, because why should he be the first one to pay more and to reduce his marginality or his profit on projects? So we need to find a good way to calculate the real CO2 emission, if we look at CO2 and CO2 impact, and also impact, not only the CO2 impact on the production, on the use and the recycling, but also the total CO2 impact on this each particular product that make the customer, because at the end, who is paying? The final customer, only by tax or by price, is going to pay for this, to be aware about the impact on the acquisition is doing. So we need to find a good way to certify this kind of CO2 emission. But I understand it's quite complex, because if you are in a world that is international trading and transportation and production on every place of the world, we need to find a right way not to make unfair competition between the different players.
I think Heineken is a really interesting example, because just from my consulting days, they were always a case study for the really best supply chain management. And in doing that so well, they saved a lot of money. And I just wonder if there are ways, you know, to pollute less and effectively just use less energy overall. If you can deliver both the change of fuel so that it's greener, but also you reduce the amount used or wasted by going through these processes, it seems like, you know, everybody can really win from that, and they don't have to wait for other people to jump in, because they'll benefit themselves already by not having to buy as much. Is that something that you're finding working, that combining both a change of fuel or a change of process that reduces pollution, but it also just reduces overall energy requirements?
You know, there's a new way of thinking about all the supply chain. First, the first priority for everybody is to save energy. And then after that, it goes into your direction, Alicia, to say to optimize your value chain in terms of energy, not only in terms of cost. But this is also a parameter that is now controlled, the CO2 emission, the energy consumption, to get the best value chain, which doesn't mean always the cheapest. The cheapest is not always the best. And then after that, at each step, you look at what you can save, what you can optimize in terms of energy, and of course to have a more closed circuit, buy locally, etc. There are a lot of initiatives in that way. And also create more value there, because this is not only reducing the CO2 emission and the impact on the environment, but also creating more wealth in the local place. And the second is to transform any fuel or product that you are using to a more greener fuel or greener product, like the ammonia for the fertilizer that can be green, and to identify what is the real impact on the final product. We see that for the green steel, same story. We see that also for battery. For example, there are some initiatives to produce battery in Europe where you can use renewable electricity to produce this battery that will make you save maybe 20% of the CO2 emission globally on the battery production. There is a lot of also initiatives to recirculate all the very, very rare material that are included in the battery, like lithium and cobalt, to use this more efficiently and not to go and dig into the earth and extract this from the earth, but to recycle as much as you can. So all these initiatives we can see. Saving energy, being more efficient, and then after that, changing from alternative product.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. But even so, changing industrial processes is challenging. Does NextChem aim to play the role of a disruptor or a collaborator? How is the sector generally reacting to your approach?
You said that. You know, it's... You know, the industry we have in Europe or everywhere, you know, it's the result of decades of investment, decades of optimization based, you know, on first coal, then after that oil and gas. So you cannot be a disruptor, because then after that it's impossible to be a disruptor. You try to do it on case by case to identify the first business case that works. And to support that, we are more supporter to and the collaboration. I believe more in collaboration between the different stakeholders, technology, investors, customers also that own the asset. You cannot be too much in the revolution side. You know, also I am French. Revolution is well known in France, but revolution has some limitation also, because it creates a big impact that is not always good. You have a lot of assets that are there, a lot of jobs that are also important for each country. You cannot too much revolutionize all that. So you need to transform the industry. You need to think longer term and to see where it makes sense to develop new technology to adapt the existing asset, especially when you are talking about big asset, you know, big refinery, big chemical plant, big steel plant. It's very, very much complex to say we scrap it everything and we do a new one, which may happen. You know, I think this there will be some, I call it industrial migration, you know, in the world, because it's linked to the energy sources and the and tomorrow there will be some change in places where you're going to invest. You know, when you look back in Europe, why do we have a lot of industry in the rural area, in the north of Europe, yeah, in Germany, Belgium? Because there was coal at the beginning. This is just reason. There was iron ore and coal. So you produce the steel, and then from the steel you produce the car, etc., etc. So this was the reasoning. And I think tomorrow we will have also some kind of, and this attracts a lot of people to live there and grow the population. And there was a lot of migration. I am an example, you know, because I was born in north of France. My parents came from south of Italy because there was job. So this will happen again in the term of world organization. There are places where you have a lot of sun, a lot of wind, which is a more competitive resource, and you can create more value-added product. And you can transform, for example, the iron ore into steel that then you can export the steel, which has more value. So there will be migration. And what we do in next game, we try to identify the partners with who will work together to make the first transformation of asset that can be transformed, because it's good to reuse the existing asset. But also where are the place that will be the hub of tomorrow, new source of energy and new source of good.
Adamo, given that focus and that prioritization that you've just described, what's next for NextChem, and what exciting things have you coming up?
You know, every day there are new ideas. You know, we are today working very hard to put all the pieces of the technology together to make a real project implemented. We are working in ammonia, in biofuels, SAF. These are the projects we want to develop. What's next? I can tell you, you know, every day is a new challenge. So I don't know what is going to next, but I'm sure it will be exciting and it will be technology driven, and it will be, of course, at scale. That's why it motivated me so much every day to wake up and to have a new challenge and to work with nice people that want to make things happen.
That sounds great. Well, we're really happy you came on the show and people could hear about what you're working on. And we're looking forward to what NextChem comes up with next. So, Patrick, what did you think? Adamo is a force of nature, isn't he? I mean, so much energy. What did you think about NextChem and their plans and sort of the outlook on the market?
Well, before we even get into that, and Adamo certainly is a force of nature, as you say, but also has the patience of a saint, given the technical challenges we had in getting him connected and whatnot. So really both appreciate that, but also there was plenty of reason to be distracted and dealing with the complexity of the kind of the package and the profile of NextChem, and Adamo, of course, sailed through it gracefully, right? So what to say? I think the first point here is that's a really interesting theme, from my perspective anyway, is around circularity of the carbon molecule, right? So like how we talk about plastics or methanol or any you know, sustainable aviation fuels or et cetera, how we talk mm-hmm. about circular carbon streams and how those feed into the next generation of, you know, some of our life necessities, right? And mm-hmm. that's a really, really important strand of it. And I appreciate very much that, you know, Adamo and his team are working very much on that cutting edge feed around how some of these general chemical strands of business that are necessary for whole heaps of the things that we used on a day-to-day basis, but also reach into some of the most, you know, challenging to decarbonize areas is going to be a hugely important space. So that's one piece. It is extremely challenging. There's no question that the, you know, there's a reason this isn't a ready-made, rolled-out kind of sector already. It's complex. It's costly. You need to have a very structured and well-designed perspective on how you would engage the markets. But also, most critically, it is a disruptive business model, right, in a sense. Albeit, I think, you know, that's part of the joy of being engaged in the energy transition space in the heavy industrial areas, is that it isn't simple solutions. It is acknowledging the complexity and understanding the challenge that comes with actually transitioning these sectors. That I think is the first one, which I really do appreciate and enjoyed. I think that the second kind of aspect of this, and it's a fundamental question that we face in the energy transition conversations generally anyway, is around certainty and certification and booking claim systems and CI intensity or carbon intensity scores and transparency around how those are calculated and reporting, etc. You know, that certification aspect and that certainty of product allows that differentiation. And if you have uncertainty around that, it's extremely challenging. So I think that conversation and that aspect of the conversation around, you know, recognizing proof for buyers, understanding kind of, you know, feedstock qualities, understanding the difference between industrially captured CO2 versus something like a DAC style system, which obviously is going to right now come at a significant cost consequence, but also is just important to understand kind of in terms of a relative quality and how we would think about it. And that's not to say good or bad. It's just to say, you know, that information, that granularity is going to be important as we kind of get into these spaces particularly. So I really was impressed by that. I'm also just very, very interested in kind of how they are generally approaching this space. So yeah, that's me. What about you?
Yeah, no, I think we haven't really broached this before, but that was sort of the promise of hydrogen, is that instead of taking oil and breaking it down into different petrochemicals that are useful for various things, plastics, different types of plastics amongst them, this is actually building those materials up. So you, if you can, to the extent, you know, avoid the carbons, right? So you're taking your clean hydrogen and you're putting it together with different pieces to basically make the same hydrochemicals as opposed to petrochemicals. And you can do quite a lot with hydrogen. I mean, once you get to methanol, then you can get to the olefins. And I think it's really interesting that this is sort of groundbreaking. And I think it's also the first time in our sector, if you include renewables as well, where patents play a really big role, because it is so complicated. And, you know, within the chemicals industry, they're so used to patents, pharmaceuticals and specialty chemicals companies, you know, it's all about the patents, right? If you don't have a long enough patent, you just can't support the R&D and all of the development that goes into making something useful for someone. So I think it's kind of interesting, because obviously in the renewable space, I mean, there's not too much to patent. Even in hydrogen, you know, ICE has some IP, but, you know, it's not going to be thousands of patents. That is not what's going to sort of change the trajectory of the company. But Adamo and NextChem, you know, they've been acquiring companies and their IP over the last couple of years at a really quick clip. I mean, I think just in the last few months, they acquired GasConTec, and they have a lot of innovative patents in hydrogen, ammonia, methanol, et cetera. And then they also set up a special company called MyRemno, and that is with a company called BioRenova. So basically, it's kind of a joint venture that they set up together. And BioRenova has inserted 80 different patents into that entity. And then they're going to grow that to market those products. And the whole point being that these will be greener chemicals. And also, this particular acquisition, the last one I was just talking about, is in sort of the plastics area. There's been a lot of difficulty recycling plastics generally. In a lot of cities, you know, you have a place to put your plastic, but it doesn't actually get separated from anything, and it doesn't really get recycled. And they have some patents to help pull the plastics out of whatever it's surrounded by and to be able to recycle that. And I think that's really great, right? I mean, being able to recycle is fantastic. And it's one of the reasons that people prefer aluminum and some of these other metals instead of plastic is because you can recycle them. But if you can also recycle plastics, then it's cheaper and you still end up with the same, you're not putting in a landfill and you're not wasting more product. So I think it's pretty exciting.
Definitely very exciting. And you know, you flagged the MTO pathway for chemicals production, you know, certainly different from, you know, the conventional path, but there are operating MTO facilities, you know, in the world today. It is just a challenge in terms of the cost and economics right now, most of the time. So, you know, it's a space where there is huge innovation and huge drive to improve the general positioning. And, you know, as you rightly flag, you know, improvements in recyclability and recovery on the chemical side is going to be hugely consequential if that can become cost competitive, especially. I think I have one question for you, which, you know, links back to your point around the acquisitions and the positioning, but like, how do you kind of contemplate, you know, these sort of spaces as a, you know, kind of from that investor's perspective? You know, how does, you know, the number of acquisitions, obviously with very specialist kind of companies targeted for sure, but how does that speak to that investor environment? And, you know, how do you even kind of go about contemplating that kind of acquisition oriented world at the start of these early markets? Conscious that you had to do this a few years ago, Alicia.
Well, I think that, yes, you've got to prove your TAM, right? Your total addressable market. You need to decide what that is and decide how you can get a big chunk of that and make that storyline available to investors in a way that they can trust. I think that having patents is very helpful for that. That gives investors a little bit of ease. It's easier when there are patents. But I also think that a lot of these acquisitions have been more of an IP acquisition than it is a human resource acquisition. It has, I guess, less chance of ending in tears. I'm sure you've heard all of the different quotes about mergers and acquisitions, but like something like 2/3 of them are unsuccessful. The share price of either company, they go down. It's, you know, you have a lot of CEOs that get some money in their pocket and it's just burning a hole. They really want to buy something, get very attached, and they acquire it. And it doesn't really fit in with the corporate culture that's already there. But I think in this case, it's a bit different because I do think it's more like acquiring a drug. They're acquiring a compound and the R&D around it and the patents around it. But it's less about human capital. Like the old joke about buying a consulting company or even like a bank, you know, investment bank, is that, you know, it's really tough when your assets walk out the door every night. It's very hard to be sure that you're going to be able to actually fit everything together. But I think he has a much better chance because it's more about the know-how and the actual patented the patents themselves. But I don't think these are huge groups of people. So that's generally the harder part. And I don't think something that he would very much enjoy if he's not going around doing private equity to fire people. That's not a motivation. What he wants to do is get the information and the capability to make these cleaner compounds and to make them more recyclable. So I think he's got much better odds than usual.
Given, you know, the question that always jumps to my mind when we think about these spaces is, you know, the capital outlay required for large industrial projects, even small industrial projects, really, to be honest, but, you know, is not insubstantial. And the ticket size is challenging often. There is an additional feature challenge to try and be a new actor in what are already established commodities markets that require industrial processing. It's a challenge that is a common feature, I think, in most cases. So the patience on the financing side or even just the structuring of it is always an area where I always have questions or always wonder kind of how you start to broach these questions with, you know, investors who may not have the same kind of ease or familiarity with the challenge or the market, because to your point, the TAM here is often absolutely huge numerically. Getting access to it is not a short or necessarily easy process. So interesting how acquisition dynamics perhaps help you in engaging these. Sorry, go ahead.
It is quite complex, but he is playing in a space that already exists. So I think, you know, the way that people automatically assume that hydrogen and ammonia and should be used for the sectors that they're currently used in, you know, those are only the only sectors people really talk about. They're like, okay, well, we need ammonia anyway, because we need fertilizer. And so, you know, or we need hydrogen because we need space shuttles or whatever the reasoning is. But it was more about like existing markets and then attacking them with a cleaner product and then ineffective sales pitch of a green premium. But this is different because these are existing markets that people haven't really been thinking about. And then they're just taking a different approach to get to the same place. And the approach they're taking is cleaner. So it doesn't have to be, they don't have to go head to head with Aramco or some kind of, or SABIC or some kind of petrochemicals giant, because basically they're going after patents and then they can use the patents to produce the products that the buyer will get to compare once we have some certification and we have the ability to track the background of the compound. They'll get to compare, you know, do they want to have the one that's clean and that meets their 2030 or 2040 or 2050 goals? Or are they going to stick with the petrochemical route? And I think this is, you know, it's obviously another area that can be cleaned up to such a degree. So I think that that is good. I mean, Adamo himself complained about what you were just saying. You know, the bankers often look backwards. It's really hard for them to picture the future. They basically just extrapolate from the past. And so this makes anything new a little bit harder, definitely for debt. You know, it's more common with equity that you're actually taking a chance and you're assuming things are going to change with your product, right? Whereas a bank kind of assumes nothing will ever change and you'll just go on that same trajectory forever. and that's obviously neither of them is really accurate. But I think that if you're trying to replace an existing chemicals market and you have something cleaner and potentially cheaper even, or at least not more expensive, then I think it's a really easy story to tell. It's easy to identify the TAM because it's an existing market. And then you just have to point to the regulations and the companies, their announcements about, you know, decarbonization. And those are the people who are going to buy from you. So I think it actually has, it's a little easier, I think, than it is when you're talking about using hydrogen in a totally different way than anyone ever intended. That's harder. It's a harder story to tell. Of course, we're telling it and it makes sense in a lot of different markets. But I think for this, you know, you can point to a market for these specialty chemicals or, you know, these petrochemicals, and you can say, look, I'm going to make that, but I'm going to have less emissions just in processing, but also I'm going to start with something cleaner, with the clean hydrogen. And I think that is actually something bankers could probably get their arms around.
Well, on that that note or call to arms for bankers to get their arms around these sort of pieces, I think it's you know, maybe a final quick reflection of, you know, this is a pretty necessary part of the energy transition challenge, and it's really quite encouraging to hear progress and also to see movement in the market, and you know, really appreciated, you know, Adamo coming on and telling us with the vigor and enthusiasm that he showed, as you rightly flagged at the beginning, you know, about this space, right? Like it's a extremely challenging, complex space. It's an existing established market, it's a known market, and in terms of hydrogen world, you know, this is an area where people have been using hydrogen already and have been doing so since nearly the dawn of the market. So it is a critical one to do well and to get right. And it's also one that we will need. So Perhaps with that, I'll leave you with the last word, Alicia. Any final thoughts?
No, I think, you know, it's just great for Adamo to come on. He just never takes no for an answer. Nothing is ever too difficult. He always finds a way to get something done. And I really admire that about his personality. And I think that's really necessary in what we're all trying to achieve with global warming in general. You know, it's not just hydrogen and the derivatives, but it's in every area, we have to think a little differently. And that's always scary for people. But luckily, we have people like Adamo who are scared of nothing.
That was Everything About Hydrogen, hosted by the team Patrick Malloy, Alicia Eastman, and Chris Jackson. If you have a question for the Hydrogen team or any of our guests and would like to get in touch, you can shoot us an email on info@h2podcast.com. Or alternatively, you can follow us on LinkedIn or tweet us. Our handle is @abouthydrogen. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.